Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3. Hi, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm Darren Moser, and joined, as always, are my fellow Strandees, Philip and Daniel. Philip and Daniel, how are we watching Voyager now? What are we doing? I don't know what to do with no new Picard. I'm lost.
We should talk about the fact that we are now getting some more competition in the Star Trek podcast space.
Oh, that's true.
That's right. That's right. Tell us about it, Daniel.
Tell us. Robert Duncan McNeil and
Garrett Wong.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Garrett Wong have announced that they're doing...
Who are, for those who don't know.
Of course. Harry Kim and Nick Locarno. They will be doing
Voyager.
So this is very popular now, right? Philip, I know you were big into the Rewatch podcast with West Wing. Weekly, right? Mm-hmm. And now, of course, The Office has its own version.
That's true.
With the Office Ladies podcast. Okay. I believe Scrubs is now doing this as well.
And then, of course, before he passed away, Aaron and Sirach were doing Deep Space Nine.
Right. Yep. On the seventh rule, yeah.
Yep. So this is big. And so they've announced that they're going to be doing a Voyager Rewatch podcast. And it's going to be launching, I believe, in the next week or so.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I'll definitely be listening to that. That sounds like a lot of fun, for sure.
Well, because, people don't realize actors usually don't see the show. I mean, how many times do we re-listen to our own show? And it's just a podcast. Like, they're working. They got to get ready for next week.
It's out of order.
Heck, they're probably working during the time window that it would be broadcasting. And back then,
if you missed it.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm predicting now there's going to be a lot of, I don't even remember filming this episode, but, and then be like, oh, this is the one with the macroorganisms. Oh, Lordy, so.
Well, it's so funny because I was thinking about this and I'm like, because I've been listening to The Office Ladies. And
Is it Angela and Jenna Fisher?
Yeah. And by the way, it's amazing. It really is one of my favorite podcasts. It's the stuff that you learn. It really is really interesting. And this is why I'm excited about them talking about Star Trek. Because I'm like, even if they don't remember half of this stuff, it's still going to be really neat stuff. Like, we're going to learn about people that we didn't really had such a big impact. We're going to learn about just silly little things that went on set. Anyways. I'm very much looking forward to it, and I really can't wait to listen to it. Did they announce what it was called?
I just looked it up. It's called the Delta Flyers.
Yeah. Okay, nice.
I assume there was a Delta Flyer, and they're like, if we put S at the end, boom.
that'll be good. I think so far their logo is like Garrett sitting behind a desk, and Tom's like lounging on a beanbag. It's very fun.
I like how one of them gets their character name and one of them gets their real name.
you know what I mean. Yeah.
Garrett and Tom.
Look, Robbie.
Sorry, Nick.
Robbie McNeil.
I should have said Nick, yeah.
Because, I think it would be interesting because, in some ways it's an exercise of, for them. Because I'd be curious about whether they've actually watched everything. I'm sure Garrett has because he's actually a Star Trek nerd. I don't know about
That's
Robbie.
True.
But to actually watch all the episodes and be like, oh, that's what fans keep asking about, and then just anytime you go to a convention now, I've watched that. So I know.
Yeah.
I
feel like of all the Voyager crew, like those would be the two that I would have kind of expected to kind of watched a lot and kind of be interested and absorb in the lore and stuff. And cause Robert's done a lot of directing mm-hmm. as well. So, it'll be interesting to see. And I can't wait to tune in. That's going to be a lot of fun.
And hopefully, and I don't see why not, but they can, especially during these times where lots of people are home and available, they can get some co-stars on.
Yeah.
And that'd be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, so. I need some Ethan Phillips.
I
bet you he'd be fun.
My favorite part was on this tweet. I forget what it was, a tweet from, I think, Robbie, but Bob Picardo did give him a subtweet of like, Mr. Paris, you're late for your shift in sick bay.
When they break the fourth wall like that, it's so fun. It really is. So, Daniel's looking forward to the Delta Flyers. Philip, what are you, Well, how are you voyaging?
If we're doing Star Trek news, right, which I know we don't usually do, but Star Trek news, the it's at rumor level, but I'm sure at base there is a truth to that, and that is LeVar Burton talking to Picard producers, which, you know, unsurprising. I think I'm sure they all are, but that seemed to be getting, you know, from like, you know, an item in like Variety of like, you know, LeVar Burton's talking to Picard producers too. LeVar Burton coming back season two, which, you know, that's not the truth. It's just, you know, he's interested and he's talking.
And I mean, I would expect him to be like same as Frakes level, you know, not like he's not going to be Seven of Nine joining the crew, but he could be manning a station or off doing something, you know. I mean, of all of them, I would expect him to still be in Starfleet. Because so far, all the other crew we've met have not been in Starfleet.
Well, he's a novelist, isn't he? Right, writing that next book with you know, Leah making maybe. Pasta. You know,
I keep thinking of the Voyager episode where they go into the far future.
Timeless.
He's like
Captain LaForge of the Odyssey.
Captain LaForge.
Yeah,
it does feel like a little bit of a missed opportunity though that they didn't put him in season one when he is supposedly, like, around those events. Like, he exists at that place and is doing those things.
Yeah, according to the books.
You know, that would be interesting if they only used him in flashbacks around the time of the synth uprising and all. That's a good question. Like, are we done with the synth timeline? Are we good? Like, do we have to unpack anything from that, you know?
Don't get us started, right?
From that time?
Get us started. But anyway, that was the news. That was the news. LaVar's looking at it.
Yeah, that'll be fun. And yeah, we're still cruising on to the next.
Guinan's coming back in some capacity. So.
That's true. Yep. That's true.
That is the View canon right there. We know.
When you say the
officially,
View.
Officially. Yeah. Yep. It is canon on the View. We know officially.
We have documentary, you know, video evidence of an offer acceptance.
Something Star Trek related happened to me this week.
Oh.
And so I was sitting there with my girlfriend, and she said for some law class that she had to watch some movies. She said, I have to watch some movies with law scenes, courtroom scenes in them. And I go, well, do you have to watch movies or can you watch Star Trek episodes? Of course I said that. So,
and she rolled her eyes back into her head. And
no, she was quite enthused about it. She goes, you know what? That'd be fun and a little different than what everybody else is doing. So,
okay. So what'd you put
Measure
up
of a Man?
Plate?
We all know it.
She's already seen Measure of a Man.
Okay. Yeah. Now so I want to hear what beyond Measure of Man. Cause I'm assuming.
I didn't do Measure of Man cause she's already seen it. So, we did,
Author.
Nope.
I was thinking the Deep Space Nine with Worf, where, you know, he fires.
No, but I thought about that one, but we actually did Dax from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, okay.
And then we did the Drumhead.
Oh, okay.
Drumhead's good.
Yeah. So
I was thinking, there's also, like you said, I think you said Philip Court-Marshall from TOS. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good one, too.
Technically the Menagerie, but not really.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you'd have to watch all that. That'd be a lot.
I mean, because it's not really, it's more just a vehicle to tell another story than an actual trial story.
Right, right.
It's like, we have this footage we'd like to use.
But you know what? That is somewhat interesting, but it's not as interesting as what you've been doing, Darren. I really want to talk to you about this. Tell everybody what's going on in your life.
So, like last year, I watched all of Babylon 5 for the first time, and that was really fun to go through. And so I'm finally getting around to watching the 2005 Battlestar Galactica reboot. And I just finished rewatching the miniseries, which is what kicks it off. Yep, So Say Will, that's how it ends. And I'd seen the miniseries before. I saw that when it aired first. I never had cable, and so it was on Sci-Fi, and so I never caught. And it's not that I don't know that it's a good series or all of that. I just never had the time. And now that Sci-Fi is streaming it for free, I think through July, because of the quarantine and all of that, I'm like, hey, now's a good time to catch up with my favorite Cylon. So I'm very excited. I'm excited I got through the miniseries, so now I can start consuming it in episode chunks.
Yeah, I was going to, because I remember when I saw it, it had already been on the air because I was watching it on, you know, hard copy or hard data. Hard disk, because a friend or someone who I worked with, coworker, introduced me to the miniseries. And I'm just like,
were you watching it on TOS post-it note? Is that what you put it into the data reader? And
And I was just like, oh God, that's great. And you're like, well, here's season one, keep going. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I tried to rewatch it with my wife. I think it's a little too gritty and realistic for her, which is fine. So like, I think we got all the way to like the second episode of the regular series one. She's like, does it get any happier? I'm like, no, it's not really.
It's tough.
I mean, if you want that, I guess you could watch the 80s version. Might be a little more rounded and a little less, you know, intense. Yeah. I don't know. But I like how they don't discount the 80s one. It basically, they make that the first Cylon War. And then, I mean, you look over the fact that, like, the characters' names are the same and stuff like that. But if you treat that as the first Cylon War, and this is, like, 20, 40-something years later, and I think that's it's a brilliant setup. And I think the way that they did it with the miniseries gives you plenty of time to get to know the characters in one, like, two-part swoop. So now you don't have to spend, like, an episode of character just to get to know them. Like, you know enough of the groundwork. And you got some twists and turns, and there's a nice little twist at the end of the miniseries, but it's been good so far. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's probably one of the greatest American series with that many characters. In other words, having to balance that many stories, well, not even storylines, because, you know, without going into it, you know, because
it's an ensemble cast. It's definitely that.
Because large one, I mean, and you'd say like Deep Space Nine, but like they had all the characters at the beginning. I mean, they add them as it goes on, but like, you know, here's your 20 action figures to play with this whole series, you know.
Well, and it was right at the cusp of like CG, where you could really use it to kind of paint this bigger area, but not break your budget on it. So I mean, yeah, it relies heavily on CG, but it like the space stuff all looks amazing, and you know, some of the city stuff you can tell like they're kind of just. It, you know, okay, this is a 3-second shot. We're going to make it, get through it, and we don't have to, you know, we're not going to blow the budget on that. But what, it's Ronald D. Moore as the showrunner. I mean, we know him from many great Trek projects. Some, you know, a lot of DS9, I think. Did he do a little Voyager? I think
he did. And in fact, I wanted to bring that up because I think a lot of what you see in Battlestar comes
what he wanted to do.
His frustration from his they hired him on to Voyager and he did like an episode or two and he was like done after that. Yeah. So I think I've
heard that a lot of like this is, you know, from the continually damaged Galactica to, you know, just and again, I don't begrudge Voyager for that because I honestly feel if the CGI had been like 5 years earlier, you know, where they didn't have to worry about well, we have to reuse all the model shots because we can't afford to make new shots every single week. You know, I think they could have done the slowly distressed Voyager we kind of wanted. But that's, you know, what's coming up to our topic today is actually from watching that is there was a great space battle. There's a couple of great space battles, but the big one was at the end of the miniseries where the Galactica is firing off against... two base stars, their mobile battle stations, and a bunch of Cylon Raiders. And it is just great, great tactics, great... It's not even grit, it's just real. It's just realistic physics, realistic fighting. And it made me start thinking about big space battles, because we get a lot of those, actually, in Star Trek with 700-something. When are we going to start saying 800-something, guys? We're going to get there sooner than we know.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure what the total count is up to now, although we're kind of going a little slower. I mean, 10 episode seasons, but you know, we are still making traction.
I know I'm watching TOS and because you often say that, Darren, about like the 22, there are 30 episodes, 3-0 episodes in season one of TOS, by the way.
And they're all really long. They're much longer.
I forget that. Yeah, that's true. And they were all, you know,
50 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever. Yeah.
So, well, and I was just talking to my mom about MASH the other day, and they were like, yeah, that great episode towards the end. What was that, season 8? I'm like, try 11. Yeah. Like, that series went on and on and on and on. I mean, even though they had a half season last episode. But anyway. But I wanted to talk about space battles of Star Trek. And this could be movies. This could be TV shows. And because we get a lot of them. And it could be a simmering standoff. It could be, you know, let's cram as many spaceships as we want. So kind of like when we do these lists, you know, we can round robin and go around and each kind of mention one. But I'll start so that if you guys need a little more prep time, I'm going to start with the survivors. which is TNG. This is the one with the great and powerful Kevin. And we're just warming up. We're warming up. So this is the one with the Hoosnock ship that's coming in to fight the Enterprise D, and it's all an illusion, but it is, you know, it's testing the crew and how they're basically trying to fight this unstoppable enemy, because the more they fire at it, the more it gets more powerful and shooting back on them. And really the only way to defeat it is to convince Kevin to stop, as Troy is bemoaning in the background from the music box. But now again, I know it's not anyone's, I'm not saying it's a top 10 of space battles from Star Trek, but
wouldn't have been on my list. No, I gotta be honest.
What do you guys think of the great and powerful Kevin's fight?
When you said space, I'm like, was there a space battle in that? But then I kept remembering, yes, there was the illusion, and then it chased him away, and then blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then it kept coming back, and eventually Picard is just like, we're not going to fight because it's not real. And everyone looks at him like, really, sir? But in the end, he was right.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so Daniel, give us one of your Star Trek space battles. And you don't have to pick from Picard if you don't want to. I mean, you can pick from any other series as well.
So, I'm going to actually, since you had the opportunity, you set yourself up and you kind of struck out there. I'm going to hit the big one, and I'm going to say the Battle of Wolf 359, of course. But we can talk about it multiple times because it's multiple episodes.
Right. It is.
See, the thing, of course, this topic is, it's really interesting, Darren, that they brought it up, because Star Trek is never, almost never, about shooty space battles. It's just, that's part of what happens, or it might be like an event, but it's not about that. So like, even if you go back and watch Best of Both Worlds, it is very tame, like, compared to what we see now.
Well, because for, like you said, Best of Both Worlds, they see the aftermath, which, you know, is a great way to save money on your special effects to not show the battle, but show the aftermath of it.
Yep.
I mean, all we saw was that poor Mars defense perimeter getting wiped out.
But in terms of space battles, it's obviously a pretty significant one.
The Melbourne.
In the Star Trek universe.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The Melbourne.
Kyushu.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a
damn. But we do, of course, see it in
Emissary.
Emissary. That's true. Yeah, which is awesome, because even that feels like a slice of it. Like, it feels like a bigger battle going on.
That was too soon.
But yeah, when they jettison away from the Saratoga, and you kind of see it blow up in the reflection of the transparent aluminum. I was going to say glass, but I corrected myself. But yeah, no, Battle of Wolf 359. You know, I would be fine with them revisiting it again. You know, let's just see another angle of it. Maybe like in the Borg data tapes or something. That would be kind of cool.
I was going to say, they can do that in Star Trek Online. They do it on Star Trek Online. But it would be interesting in a new Star Trek game where you could visit. Because, I don't know, STO, that's how the cool kids say Star Trek Online. STO has its own graphics and interface, which kind of get a little rote for me after a while. That's just my opinion. But anyway, it'd be cool to have a different perspective of that, where you could, you know, some sort of training holodeck game or...
Yeah, you know, Picard could have easily had a flashback to Wolf 359.
When he stepped on board the Borg ship.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Did he have some kind of... It's a little hard now to remember.
He did, but it was kind of being assimilated is the flashback.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I mean, and you guys already said it, with Wolf 359, by not showing it, you kind of imagine it more in your head. But with your whole premise, Darren, of course, the cool thing with BSG, you know, sort of has that... I don't know if they have a trademark name for it, that little zoom in they do, zoom. You know, where the ship's on fighter or whatever comes into focus.
Right.
Wait, I mean, it's cool. Well, they do it every time.
Feel like the camera's placed somewhere in the battlefield and it's filming from that location.
Trying to find it.
Which is a really cool, you know. Yeah, it's like the, where is it? There it is. Yeah. You know. And again, they use it effectively.
I enjoy it. I think the hard part with some of these battles, and obviously it's technology, one assumes, or money, or both, where... You know, especially like what we saw in Best of Both Worlds to a certain extent, and even the Emissary, and probably what we're going to talk about for the large part, at least in the 20th century of production, you sort of have this flat, you know, 2D battle, you know, and that's about right. it. But I mean, with World 359, though, you know, even though it's models, it is cool to see the Enterprise D, and then you're just surrounded by the different hulks of the different ships as it passes by. Yeah. And again, that's not a space battle, but you can sort of, you know.
You get the feeling this was where they had their stand.
And for one thing, as cool as we find the Borg, it's not really a, I mean, I won't say a pick without saying another example. The Borg, it's a cube, you know. You can only make that so sexy as far as a space battle.
It's like a moving tower defense game. You know, it's not that exciting.
Right.
It does make you feel like, though, especially now going back to it, the best of both worlds, and thinking about it, I'm like, man, this ship has the ability to take down, like, I can't remember how many, 20, you know,
there's a lot of ships,
starships. And then I think about it in my head, and I'm like, it could definitely take down a flower. No question. Easy peasy. It could easily take down a flower. So, whatever. That's all I'm saying. All right.
So, okay. So, I got another one. This one's from...
Hey.
Oh, you're just going to skip Philip?
No, I thought you just said one, Philip.
Hey, well, what did I say?
I don't know.
Exactly.
Go for it.
Well, I was just going to add to what we have said, because I was going to say without saying it. First Contact. Star Trek First Contact. Okay. There was not a space battle in the episode First Contact. Because to me, that's an example for me, you know, and everyone's opinions may vary, where it's this big space battle and it's a movie, so they can play with the technology. You get all the ships zooming around the Borg cube, and you know.
You get a feeling like this is kind of their version of what the Battle of Wolf 359 was like, but it's not the exact same battle.
And you have the, you know, Defiant doing its Defiant thing, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, the ship's getting
and
the
Enterprise swoops in.
Yeah, and you see, you sort of get a little more, you know, it's not the 2D fight, and obviously it's a feature film, so you can play with a lot more, but
right.
And it wasn't the whole movie, which I think is, I mean, as far as, you know, we can always talk about First Contact forever, but the brilliance of that is, I mean, that's basically the first act, is you have the huge space battle, and it's not the third act, it's not the last act where you usually
it's the opening act.
It's the opening act, and that's where I think you can do, that makes it to me more exciting, that you just do all this boom, 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 but then you actually make the rest of it a story. I think that's the right way to use the space battle, that's my opinion. But anyway, so yeah, I thought First Contact, and you get to see all the different ships we haven't never seen before.
Get the Borg Sphere, which is kind of cool. Well, and we get that pivotal moment where Picard pauses for emphasis, and you see like three ships get destroyed in that moment. But you know, hey, as long as it looks cool, Picard. Yeah, that's a good pick. And yeah, I think between First Contact, Best of Both Worlds, and Emissary, it's kind of like the master take of like the Borg battle. You know, I mean, I guess we could count Q Who, but that's kind of not. That's very, very tame in comparison.
Well, and even though I'll use your word, very tame, that's the first time we got to see the Enterprise D firing every friggin' weapon it had. You know,
right.
Every phase array, every photon torpedo,
everything.
So, you know.
All right. So, speaking of everything, I was thinking about the Sacrifice of Angels, the retake of Deep Space Nine. So, set the stage, the Dominion is trying to take down the minefield. We know they're going to get it down really soon. And the Defiant leads a giant fleet to take back the... So again, you have stationary, you know, space battle where they're all flying around the station to take it back. And you get a lot of ships in this one. I mean, I think, is this the one with the shot where it's just like the fleet? And it's just this massive fleet of... You know, Federation ships and Klingon ships, and everybody's just ready to start firing, and it looks so cool.
In terms of like pure space battle, space points, like I'm pretty sure I would give it to this episode. It's definitely the biggest, like
a massed fleet. Yeah,
yeah. It feels, and it's significant too, right? Like it's not just devoid of all personality and like setup. Like this is a big culmination of the whole Dominion storyline at this point, so it's really important and it's really well done, I think, as well.
Yeah, and I don't know, I don't want to steal anyone's choices, but I'm just kind of like Deep Space Nine. Can I just choose Deep Space Nine as a space battle? Because I mean,
that's true.
Because I'm trying to think of, as odd as it sounds, with Deep Space Nine, the station itself being a stationary object. when it's not. You'd think like, oh, I mean, watching that go into battle, I mean, who cares? But that, to me, that's actually is pretty cool. Like the spinning phaser thing it has.
The spinning photon launchers. Those were cool. Yeah. I really liked,
because whether it was the Dominion attack or whether it was the Klingon attack, because that happened too with the Way of the Warrior,
that's
think.
True.
But just
Way of the Warrior.
You see Deep Space Nine defend itself is pretty, of course. I mean, they were on the other side. The station was on the other side during the Dominion War because it was occupied. But anyway, but even like when Sisko abandoned ship, you know, abandoned station. But anyway, that was pretty cool. You see that what's it called? Dorsal view, is that the way I'm saying it correctly? The top view of the station, and you see like the bird of prey, or you see the Dominion ships over it.
And you get a lot of really cool shots, and they're flying in between the superstructure. Mm-hmm. Deus Ex 9 gives a lot of, just as a set piece, when you get the big fights. Another DS9 one to just kind of, let's just round out that series, is... we get Sacrifice of Angels, which is not at Deep Space Nine, but that's the Defiant and the Lakota when the Defiant is heading to Earth.
Paradise Lost, you mean?
Sorry, Paradise Lost.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paradise Lost, where that's a cool battle because it's like Excelsior class versus Defiant, and, you know, but it's us fighting against ourselves, which
the
gives
Defiant
it a whole
just parks
other
on
layer
the back
of tension.
The warp engines. And sits there.
Yeah, it just parks right there, and they're like, "Where'd it go? We can't find it." And it's like,
then Boba Fett shows up, and it's all weird.
When then we just float away with the rest of the guard. No, that doesn't happen here.
I would say, because it gets into other series, so I'm not going to use them as an example, but just as a counterexample. So like with Picard, and to a certain extent, Discovery, and Deep Space Nine. In other words, like the bigger you make the fleet, which I know looks cooler, to me, you do lose some of it. Like, it's almost too many ships at a certain point.
Right.
I mean, we were making fun of Picard, you know, with 500,000 Romulan ships and 500,000 Star. Like, what does that even... It just turns into, like, Braveheart, with just, like, the two things just smash against each other.
I mean, I will say the one thing I don't like about... First Contact, you know, great visual battle, but it feels like it's... Like, the starships are being destroyed too easily. Like, they don't get damaged. They're just, like, obliterated.
Shields
like,
don't tend to work in starship battles.
Apparently. So, it's just, we don't, you know, it comes down to the writing. It's like, if you don't have a sense of connection to the people on that ship, it just doesn't mean anything. But, like, you know, it's like, oh, it's like that. So, that ship was fine getting shot at by... the Borg cube, but when the Enterprise comes in, it like takes 80 hits to damage it at all. Like, I don't know.
And I think there's a certain, I mean, to turn a phrase, which I know, look, I'm not a CGI artist, so I'm sure it's very hard to do, but to have what we would call fight choreography with these ships, where it's not just like, all these ships come and these ships come and smash. I mean, like, where Deep Space Nine did it.
Actual strategy? Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if the Sacrifice of Angels you're talking about, Darren, or whatever, but the one where they're not even at Deep Space Nine yet. It's that middle fleet where, like, they have the big fight. I forget what that's even called, the battle of something, the fight of something. And then, you know, the fight's, like, the only one who gets through
it
at the end.
The Chitantic? There's that one. That's where they're fighting the Cardassian weapon platforms.
Oh, not that
one. The second battle of...
Cardassian Prime. That's actually another cool one, too. But I was just thinking, because there's like a sort of infamous one where it's like the Defiant, and then there's like three Klingon vessels, and all the Klingons get thrown apart. The Defiant sort of going, swooping in and out. And then you have like, you know, Sisko saying, and it's actually...
Like they make a hole, and then he takes the Defiant
And there's whole tactics
through.
Of like, you know, and I'm making it up, I forget what he actually says, but like, you know, tell all the Excelsiors to take on the Rom, you know, this kind of ship, and, you know, tell the Romulans to focus on that, and...
I think that is Sacrifice of Angels because when they actually, because then the Defiant gets through, but the Defiant's like the only one that makes it through, and they're all still having the battle in the background, and they're trying to get to Deep Space Nine before they take down the wormhole, and that's where the one where Sisko goes into the wormhole and he's going to blow up the ship, and they plead with the prophets to just wipe out the fleet, and they do.
But like I said, I think that having a choreography makes the battle's interesting outside of a, as you say, a plot. Like, if you care about what's happening, then you can have two ships.
Is it a plot? Yeah. Is it a Romulan ploy to start a war? Okay, Daniel, give us another epic space battle.
Well, here's one that's on the opposite end of that spectrum. No big fleets, and it's much more intimate. But, of course, I don't think we could go the whole conversation without talking about Wrath of Khan.
Oh, Wrath of Khan.
And it's like the back half of that movie is basically basically kind of like a Walmart parking lot fight between two elderly people. But it's like super cool, and it's like, you know,
we prefer to call it submarine drama, but yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Well, yeah, of course, they do the submarine thing, but I'm just saying, because those two guys are just old and cranky, and the whole movie's about aging, but yeah. But it's great, it's awesome, it's super intense, and obviously it's really impactful when you watch it. And it's like, yeah, there's cool space stuff there, too, on top of everything else, so.
Yeah, you have two damaged ships that they can't see each other, and everyone says very submarine warfare. And I'd even count like how that begins with them orbiting the same moon so to hide from each other. Like, regular. you have a lot of tactics. And it's when you can't just, you know, blast each other, you know, and just, cause again, Kirk is operating on the skeleton crew, you know, with the stolen Enterprise.
And you know, I don't know if anybody else was going to bring this up, but it's filled with tension, just like the TOS episode. Also,
actually, sorry, that was Star Trek III that he stole the Enterprise. Never mind.
Yeah.
The TOS episode where it's also submarine
balance of terror.
Balance of terror. Yeah.
It's the same sort of setup. It's the same sort of feeling, but it's exciting. It's really cool to watch, and you're like kind of on the edge of your seat the whole time, and it comes down to like outsmarting the other person. It's not just fire 18,000 torpedoes at them.
Fire everything.
It's like, it's like, no, you actually have to outmaneuver them.
And again, in Balance of Terror, for, I'm not sure, budgetary reasons, like a lot of it is just inside the bridges. Like, we don't actually get a lot of ship shots in that episode.
It's cloaked.
But we don't need it. Yeah.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's convenient.
They can't see the other ship, so it's not there.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's something that, you know, from Star Trek II till, I don't know, Deep Space Nine possibly, where, and I don't know whether they're making fun of themselves or just being like, you know, someone walked in like, guys, you know we can go up and down, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's actually like, you know, Spock actually says his thinking is very two-dimensional.
Two-dimensional, yeah.
It's like Z-axis.
Well, you get the battle in All Good Things where the Enterprise, souped-up Enterprise 3 nacelle flies in and shoots through the Klingon ship from below, which is really cool.
The Calvary.
You know, the writers just got sick of hearing that question.
It's nice of all the ships to agree ahead of time how to show up along the galactic plane. I mean, that's just really nice.
It's just courtesy. I mean, you know.
All right, give us another one, Philip.
I was trying to think of a few. Well, it's such a little example, but I'll use it anyway. Voyager, the Caretaker, the very beginning, where you have the Valjean running from the Cardassians, just because it's a new kind of ship, the Valjean.
Right.
I mean, obviously it's a small ship, so you'd say, oh, well, not that interesting. But I don't know, it's kind of an interesting perspective of the Galore class, because not that it's been overused by any means, because it's just still not Dominion War. Maybe it was, but, you know, it wasn't as much used as we would see later on with Deep Space Nine. But you sort of get a scale of, like, it's a big old thing, you know, the Galore class. And, you know, where the, I don't even know what they call their weapons. We'll say phaser beam, plasma beam, whatever they have, you know, shoots out. Yeah. And then you have the aft torpedoes from the Valjean scout ship and it kind of going left and right with the Badlands and all that stuff. So, I mean, that sort of maneuverability over power, that's probably not the right word.
And the Badlands kind of really compress it to a two-dimensional plane because it's literally like a ceiling and a floor with all those kind of tornadoes in the mix.
Golovec must feel daring today.
Well, I think of, you know, actually another really good battle is Nemesis, the battle of the Rift, I think it's called. There's like a certain Typhon Rift or something that they go in where they can't contact out, and that's where the Scimitar engages with the Enterprise E, and you know with his perfect cloak, and that's a really interesting battle just because we get a lot of different tactics. We get you know, the fire all phasers at zero bearing, which was kind of cool, and,
well, I actually really love,
you know, ramming as a tactic, you know, it also works. We won't talk about space ramming and the fact that if you backed up, it doesn't work like that because you're in space. So you would just pull the ship with you. But yeah, we won't. But no, it's a really interesting battle.
And because there's no sound in space, you don't hear the dun, 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 as it backs up. So.
Oh, the beep beep. Yeah, yeah. The white lights turn on in the back.
Yeah,
of the
impulse engines flash. Yeah.
But let's see. Okay, let's get a few more. Daniel, what's your next on your list? In no discernible order.
I will actually give a nod to Star Trek Beyond, because I really liked the drone ships a lot.
The bees, they buzzing with the noise.
So, and I know it's silly and goofy and dopey, but I absolutely love when they're playing the music and they're just like riding the wave and like that. Yep. And they're just doing it for fun. And I think it's
well, and even the first battle where they literally like take out the neck. I mean, that was really cool.
It's intense. Yeah.
I mean, they just decimate. And again, I like how the Enterprise crew is smart. They're like, we are not prepared for this type of engagement, but they don't back down.
Separate the saucer.
Yeah.
That's right. And I know Philip loves watching Enterprises destroyed. Wait. So I know this is on your top five.
It's the third movie. It's what you got to do. It's in the rules.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think about this, you know, saying this seriously. Is there a good way that they've ever done destroying an Enterprise? Other than just like, we're going to write this in, and it doesn't seem contrived. Like, oh, yes, the old Klingon bird of prey destroyed the flagship, or magic drones killed the JJ prize. And I'm thinking, and it doesn't really count, and I'm just giving you another example, so I'll just say it briefly and let y'all finish. Enterprise C, maybe, is the most believable destruction of an Enterprise.
I was thinking that, and that's it. I mean, that's the one that's...
And we don't even see it destroyed in that way. Like, we know it's being fought on, and we know it's about to blow up, but we don't actually see it explode.
And you would think that if it got blown up, all of the people on it would have died. You would think that. But of course, that's not the case, but whatever. That's
maybe they surrendered.
Escape pods?
If they surrendered, all that was for nothing. Then, like, they can't do that.
Well, another one from one of my favorite Enterprise episodes is In a Mirror Darkly. We get some awesome space battles because we have the Defiant fighting and the Enterprise. And
it's weird when say that. You almost have to say what class because your mind goes to different
the Defiant, spaces. The Constitution class Defiant.
And the NX-01.
But,
the NX-01 Enterprise.
And the NX-01 Enterprise.
Whatever.
Just the Defiant Enterprise. I could totally just say that. Yeah. It works. Yeah. And you get the Tholians, and they eventually put the Tholian web around the Enterprise and I believe just destroy it in the way that they do. But it's really cool, again, because the Defiant, you know, the TOS, like Defiant, looks straight out of TOS. I mean, the noises it makes, you know, firing phasers and all of that. And it's a lot of fun. Just, they have a lot of fun with that space battle. I really enjoy it. And you have, I think, the Columbia, another...
I was trying to think what the other ship was.
Ship. Yep. Yeah, I can't remember it's specifically. It's usually the Columbia. When it's not the Enterprise, it's the Columbia.
I do love, and this isn't a space battle, but I do love when the Columbia and the Enterprise do their, like, docking thing at warp.
Oh, with Trip and...
Yeah, that was cool. I need to
was,
do it.
No, that was watch. Was that the Columbia? Yeah, that was the Columbia.
There's only two shifts.
Well, I was trying to think of there's the E squared where they do a similar thing with the shield, but that was a lot of fun.
Sticking with Enterprise for a second, and I can't remember the name of the episode.
There's a couple other ones,
but the end of the Zendi storyline, not the end, but the near the end, and I can't remember which one. It's probably like the third to last episode, or maybe even the second one. The one where
I have a couple on a list, like Countdown and Zero, or probably one of those.
But it's the one where the Enterprise in X-01, like, I remember watching at the time thinking, everyone's going to die. I can't, what are they?
Oh, yeah. Where it gets like,
yes,
they get their decimated. Butts handed to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And because I think that's when Archer is with the Zendi and he finally gets them to call it off. But you don't know that at the end of the episode, because the end of the episode is like, boom, boom, boom. Things are blowing up. Pieces are coming off. The NX-01 just like floating and you're like, credits. You're like, what the heck? There's no way they're getting out of this. So.
Yeah, it's, you know, well, I think Yeah, the Zindi were just a really powerful enemy, especially since they had different types of ships. So, yeah, you get
unfortunately, an
But I remember that where it's like they start to carve up like the saucer part, and you're just like, this ship is, it needs some dry dock time, guys. It's really messed up.
Well, don't worry, they get some along with some Nazis, some space Nazis. So that happens later.
Yeah. Which is interesting. I just started. Sorry, this is, I'm not going to. But I just started because, you know, you have free time. You're just going to start watching shows you've never watched. I just started watching Man in the High Castle. So, because I, you know, I've heard people talk about it. So I'm now watching, you know, alternative Nazi Japanese Empire world. So makes me think of that stuff. Mm. But yeah. I mean, and you mentioned it, Darren, but give it just like two more seconds. The E2 or E squared or whatever you call that episode with the two NX-01s, you know.
The one that's older and all
shadowing each other, like you said, and then they split apart like a transformer or something. You know?
Yeah, I think they were like sharing the same warp bubble field bubble.
Kind of reminds me of like the He-Man toys where you could put He-Man and Skeletor's swords together and then.
But yeah, no, I think Enterprise had a lot of really good battles. And I think, you know, again, they always had to kind of balance. You know, how powerful is this enemy? You know, because they don't have shields, even though they have like polarized holes, which is basically shields. But, you know, you just get this sense of like, okay, when we get damaged, I mean, we're pretty damaged. Like, I mean, they had the minefield episode and then the space dock episode.
Yep. Well, minefield and followed by, what is that space dock called?
I know. I can't remember the name of it.
Gonna Kill You space dock episode.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking one thing that helps Enterprise, and I think, you know, visually, this is not rocket science or antimatter science, is by having ships that look different. Yes, we're throwing shade here at Chip Picard. But anyway, like with Enterprise, and I can't remember again the episode, I'm not great on Enterprise episode titles, but the last season when, you know, it's the Vulcan three-parter or two-parter or whatever it is, where you have Trip in command in the middle of the Andorian and Vulcan fleets. And they start going at each other, and you have the NX-01 doing. And so you have these three different types of looking ships kind of going at it. And so it makes it an interesting look.
Well, there was also the episode where it was like the future and Picard and Archer's losing his memory, and like the Zindi wiped him out. Like, and so they're hiding. And you see the different, you see the other Starfleet ships that are kind of like the little Delta triangles with warp engines, you know. Because there's not a lot left in the fleet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's an interesting. Yeah, you get a lot of good space battles actually in Enterprise for what even just the spear builder fights, you know, are pretty
good. They also had the kind of sort of an advantage where they could reduce in like scale size of the battles because it was just the Enterprise. There was no big fleet of
except for the Columbia. That's like literally the only other ship out there.
No, the fleet is complete, Admiral Archer.
Yeah. We've doubled the size of our fleet in just a matter of minutes.
So even like the more minor battles did feel more impactful and they felt more relevant because
it's true.
There's like 40 people out there. We just kind of have to protect those people. That's the only thing we care about. So it's I agree. They did it pretty well.
And you get that some in season one. Like I remember even in the first few episodes where they're kind of getting beat up and they don't have phasers yet or any of that stuff. And they're like, man, like if like eight ships tried to attack us right now, we would die. Like it's
Lieutenant Reed, arm the stones, throw them at them.
pretty much.
Captain, it's not doing much.
Let's see.
Well, when I was thinking of, again, epic in nature, but small in duration, which again, I think that the quickie is what I'm going for here. Year of Hell, especially near the end.
Oh, yeah.
That final episode where it's the Voyager and then you have the Talaxians or
the Time Fleet.
Or whoever it is. Yeah, the Time Fleet. We call it that. Against the, name just escaped my head. Krennum. The Krennum. I can't really remember that.
The Krennum Imperium.
Just and everyone goes at each other and then
Anorax and his time ship.
And then, you know, you talked about ramming, Darren, and then Janeway takes out the ramming card.
I like when they ram it, and then, like, the one little cell just kind of breaks loose and clanks into the ship before it all blows up. Mm-hmm. Time's up. Yeah, no, again, some cool fights. I mean, Voyager had to make do with what it had. It couldn't separate, so we can't get
well,
those
we
awesome separate.
I guess, but it had a yacht or whatever it had.
Although, to counterbalance that, we had the, what was it, the Prometheus with the tri-vector assault mode.
That was cool.
Which was actually really cool. Little teeny mini third nacelle sticking out of the top part because, oh crap, we got to put in a cell on this part because it's got a keel still go warp.
And the music would play, right? Am I not remembering that the music would play when it split apart? It'd be like, doo, 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 doo. Or is it just the sound effect? You know, that would
No, play. It sounded really cool. The beep, 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 you know, activate tri-vector assault mode. I think actually, well, isn't the Prometheus or a ship like that's in that German book?
It is,
wasn't it, Philip?
It's a Prometheus.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've read those as well. It's actually really cool. They use it really well in that, like, it's basically, you know, when it's effectively used, it's like a mini fleet, and you're like, oh man, we don't want to fight three ships at the same time. But yeah, no, we get. Trying to think of other.
I was thinking, you know, that you said Beyond,
yeah,
and you rejected Vengeance, which is fine. in 09, you know, there's not really a lot of. I mean, there is, but there isn't.
Oh, I. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, go ahead. You're our JJ expert, Daniel.
Well, I was actually going to think. I can't believe I didn't even think about it. But of course, the opening scene to 09,
Kelvin.
Kelvin.
An amazing space battle.
It is a really cool space battle.
With obviously a very emotional and intense ending to that.
It's a lost space battle where they have to evacuate.
Kobayashi Maru.
But it actually is a win. I mean, it's a Pyrrhic victory, but it's still a win. They literally delay Nero for 25 years or whatever it is by George Kirk does by that act. So,
Thor.
Yeah, that's right, Thor. So, yeah, that's a great battle. I don't think I'd call anything at the end fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm just thinking of the part where, I'm not saying it's cool, I'm just thinking of the part where the Enterprise, you know, stop warps, as you do. And suddenly there's everything there.
Oh, that's
places
true.
Places are bumping out, you know, over Vulcan.
Where they go to Vulcan. Yeah. And
the sensors don't work.
I mean, that's one of the... I mean, yeah, it's very different, but I actually, that's a really fun effect. The whole don't see anything until you pop out of warp. Like, it kind of makes warp a little more risky. Risky is
part of the game.
Because, and you're like, oh, dang it, we got to get out of here because it's full of debris. Good thing for that parking brake because otherwise we would have died. That's basically what would have happened.
And I suppose in the interest of not being, you know, complete whatever's about it. All right, let's talk about Discovery. So the I'm trying to remember, is it the season one finale or is it maybe even before that when you have the Discovery doing its thing? You know, bloop 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 bloop, you know,
that, oh, where it does like 135 jumps.
Yeah, which no, not, I mean, when it's actually attacking, not when it's scanning the vessel.
Oh, that's
like, when it's going near the ground and it's like choo. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and then
I mean,
it's the
honestly,
end of season two where you have the launch every single ship, and now we're in a fighter.
No.
We don't talk about work. We don't talk.
Okay.
About that.
Yeah.
No, but I will say that the one or two times that they use the actual spore drive in an interesting
tactical way. Yeah.
That's cool. That is like, hey, that's at least something new and interesting, and you would think that you would put that on all of your ships and never take it off. That's fine.
Yeah, and then you have, what was the last one I was going to say? Oh, and I mean, actually, the battle in Interactions actually, semi-decent.
The Riker maneuver.
You know, where you eject the warp core, like, that's pretty intense.
Did.
And you have, igniting.
Fresh out of warp cores.
It's like, or does he say, like, is that something? Yes, we want to stay around that. It's like, oh, no, we want to get closer. It's like, why, sir? Because I tend to ram it down the Sona's throat. It's like, oh, yeah.
If you're successful, they might call this the Riker maneuver.
Joystick fans everywhere.
Oh, that was so stupid. I had that same that same stick, so it totally threw me out of that scene.
No, it just, whenever it just you made use you it, feel like Riker.
Yeah. You ever use it when you're trying to impress the Trill ensign?
That does make me think of the battle, which is also a fantastic space
TNG,
thing,
yeah.
Because we get to see the actual Picard maneuver performed.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was exciting, yeah, especially for 1987 or whatever it was at that point.
I also like in that same similar kind of vein, I think it's the peak performance battle, where Riker. Yeah, which is really cool. Just again, it's another fun. It's, you know, war games are fun when we see Federation ships do that. You know, I mean, it's not fun when Fangree show up and interfere, but maybe we should do this in the heart of our territory. That sounds a little more safe, but hey, you know.
I was thinking, because, you know, I mean, they're like, oh, it's cool, people die. No, of course not. But they don't show it. And I'm watching on my TOS rewatch on All Access. I just watched one on Netflix, but I think they're both actually remastered editions. But anyway, I'm wondering when I get to the ultimate computer what that looks like when the M5 controlled Enterprise starts, you know, killing every ship in the fleet. Because obviously the original is not really, doesn't show anything. I don't think. So it'd be interesting.
Yeah, there's like a wide shot and you see like three damaged ships.
Where they
you,
just like
you definitely
replace the serial
just,
number on the model, you know.
No, but they did damage to them. Mm-hmm. Like they made the saucer, but it's all superficial. Like it looks way better in the remastered because you see actual superstructure.
And just to talk TOS, because, you know, there's not a lot of credit. But one thing, I think probably their biggest FX space battle that I can think of is, oh god, Planet Killer. That's not the name of the episode, but anyway.
Oh, Doomsday.
That's actually pretty cool with the mouth, and, you know, I mean, it doesn't look,
yeah,
in the original the side view doesn't look that cool, but in the remastered it does look cool because they actually make it look like it was an old weapon. But even in the original TOS with that mouth and the shuttle going into it, it does look kind of impressive, even though it's not, it's kind of a space battle. Space suicide.
Yeah,
but,
no, it's a
know.
Space battle, yeah. Again, you're told about the first battle and not shown it, so you get a lot of building up in the mind, I guess.
We can also bring up Undiscovered Country, which has some decent same sort of cat and mouse sort of thing going on there.
And I think so good. What makes that space battle, I mean, what I think makes
it's gotta have a tailpipe.
Yeah, it doesn't. But one thing that I think that makes that space battle is the voiceovers, the taunting. You know, if it was just like,
I have it, can fit the guys.
Because again, one of the ships is cloaked. There's nothing to look at. So, you know.
We do get to see a little bit of the tip when it shoots.
Yeah. And then just the tip.
And then when the Excelsior comes in and they just start blowing it away they both fire. Yeah, no, that's a really good space battle, actually.
Well, and here's, I also wanted to bring this up too, and it's a good transition. Like, the Excelsior shows up, and Star Trek does this a lot where, like, oh, suddenly there's a bunch of friends
Calvary.
Where there were none before. Yeah. And I was thinking of the episode, is it The Enemy?
The Defector.
I can't remember. The Defector, yeah, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Where the cloaked
the three Klingon ships.
Like,
thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I'm like, I love that surprise.
And
even
then Tom Malak is like, you will die, Picard. He's like, yes, but we'll die together.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a good. Again, I mean, we say space battle. Nobody shoots. It's all posturing, but it's really, really cool.
No, and that's the same thing with the season one finale of Picard. No one actually shoots.
It's true.
That is true. That is very true. Yeah. So, you know, Star Trek has a great history of space battles. Some are more cerebral. Some are more bridge POV. Some are, let's cram as many ships on the screen as we can. But I think we're always going to get some good battles, and I'm excited to see what new kind of interesting battles we get. Maybe some Spock shuttle battles. That would be kind of interesting. No. I think... I guess I just remembered in the... I think... Is it the Battle of the Binary Stars where we have the Cleaver ship? Or was it the second battle? I can't remember.
No, it was the first one, I'm pretty sure.
Right? I thought it was the other big battle at the end where No, it must be the Battle of Binary Star, because it's Europa it takes out. But yeah, that the Klingon cleaver ship where it's like it's cloaked and it literally just pushes itself through the other ship and just cuts it in half. That was very clever.
No, it shows up. It is in the Battle of Binary Stars, but it also shows up at the end of season two because every other ship in the universe shows up. I think. Wow, I would almost have to rewatch that, but I won't.
Memory Alpha will save us, but anyway, yeah, the cleaver ship in general was a really cool design. Because the Battle of the Binary Stars, I remember it being, it's the sarcophagus ship is the main ship, and then all these other ships, because the beacons of Minas Tirith were lit, so all the other ones show up. But yeah, I remember it was just how it was revealed was really cool, because you didn't see it coming. I mean, they didn't preface it in any way. It just literally started cutting through a Federation ship, and you're like, oh dang. Yeah, no, actually, now I think about it, it was the Battle of Binary Stars, because it was the Europa was helping in the battle, and I think they were like rendering aid, and then all of a sudden they just got hit and cleaved, and then the Klingon got in the space suit, went outside and stenciled another Federation ship on the hull, like a mark, you know, okay, that's three down, you know. No, he didn't do that. But yeah, a lot of great space battles in Star Trek. I think it's interesting how it's always been kind of like capital ship versus capital ship. Like, I think that's Star Trek at its best. When they kind of try to go fighter level, that's kind of not very Star Trek, even when they try to make it that way. So, again, like the end of Discovery Season 2, I mean, it's just throwing a bunch of stuff on the screen. But, yeah. But I'm sure we'll be getting more great space battles, and
well, we get animated space battles. You didn't mention anything from TIS, and now we have Lower Decks coming on, which I know is a comedy, but they'll probably still have space battles.
That's true. I'd have to do another rewatch of TIS to get some more. But I'm sure we get some cool battles. Yeah, no, that'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to space battles from Lower Decks. That could be really interesting, especially if we're not on the bridge ever, and it's all just like, we got hit. Why did nobody told us that we're in a space battle? That's good to know.
Why are there rocks in the ceiling?
just don't ask questions. So. All right, Philip, if someone wanted to talk to you about your third point of view in the Battle of Wolf 359, where would they find you?
They can find me for my commemorative memorial on Wolf 359 on Twitter at NC Public Servant.
And Daniel, if someone wanted to talk to you about the Enterprise and Defiant fighting, non-descriptive, what series that's in, where would they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at 1UpDan. That's the number one. Not the word, as in there's only one definitive timeline where both the Enterprise and Defiant would fight together. And if you want to find out, you'll have to find me there.
And if someone wanted to talk to me about the great and powerful Kevin, can't believe I still opened with that, they can find me on Twitter, Instagram under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here with a space battle overhead on City Alpha 3.